Hi, I'm Mike Sklens, and welcome to episode 71 of Nintendo World Report's connectivity podcast, The Puddle in the Drought. This week we've got two segments for you. First up, Neil and Patrick look at quarter ones of years past to see how they stack up against 2013. In our second segment, myself, Scott, and Patrick talk about games we've been playing recently. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to another segment here on Connectivity. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and with me today to talk about Q1 through the ages is Hello. Patrick Barnett. So this idea kind of spawned out of the crushing disappointment that most of us felt when we saw the initial Q1 2013 lineup.
It still kind of is. Which,
well, we got more clarification on games actually coming out. Which, I guess for Wii U, it's still crushingly disappointing. But I think for 3DS, it actually didn't really make an about-face, but we just got, like, confirmation that Luigi's Mansion is coming out in March and stuff like
that's,
that.
That's the very end of like, Q1, so almost Q2.
Yeah. Yes. Still counts.
Logistics.
Still counts. Yeah. So, it seemed like it would be a cool idea to go through the past few Q1s and kind of discuss what games came out and how this current Q1 kind of stacks up to the past. We're going to go back as far as Q1 2007, kind of the first Q1, of the Wii, and also compared to how the Wii U is. This is the same position, and let's get right going and talk about the Wii in early 2007, in which they had two Nintendo games, and two Nintendo games that came out in January and February, which makes it exactly two more Nintendo games than the Wii U has in January and February.
Yeah.
It's that those two games, WarioWare Smooth Moves and Wii Play, just about, by the end of February, it might be the same amount of retail games just with those two games. The only ones I can kind of think of off the top of my head that will be out by the end of February is Rayman Legends, but there might be another game.
I can't think of anything, actually.
Yeah, but, I mean, we do need to keep in mind eShop and everything, because that is a little
bit of
a disparity.
We've had two eShop games at this point.
Yeah, and it seems like we might be getting to the point where the Wii U eShop gets a weekly release, because we know Puddle is coming out this week, and next week I kind of assume Zen Pinball 2
Fist
is out.
The North Stars
I think the only reason why
too.
It's not out... Oh, okay. Then maybe Zen Pinball 2 will
I wouldn't
be
say we're at the point of one a week. I'd bet maybe two a month. I'd go with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, the cave was last week.
I think it's just happenstance that we're...
If this keeps up.
I have my fingers crossed, but I'm not really betting on it.
Yeah. And we still have Runner 2 should be coming out within the next month or so as well. Seems like that's getting very, very close to release. But anyway, 2007, the other third-party, or the third-party Wii games are Sonic and the Secret Rings came out in February. There's also Cooking Mama Cook-Off, which came out in March, and Kororimpa Marble Madness, which also came out in March.
The only one of those that I played was Sonic and the Secret Rings, was that, yeah.
This was kind of like, this was definitely the calm before I became a Nintendo World Report staffer. I became a staffer in... I guess Q2 2008, by the time I actually got on board. But, I mean, this is when I was heavily into Wii. I was in college, I had some disposable income. It was a good time, and I remember being real excited for Smooth Moves, getting Wii Play so I could get another controller, and getting Sonic and the Secret Rings right when it came out, and mildly enjoying that game. That's probably the last Sonic game I enjoyed in any way, shape, or form.
I rented it back when it came out, and I thought it was mediocre, but what did I know back then? I was young.
I was like, how old was I in Q1, 2007? 18? Something like that, so I guess you would have been like...
Eighth or ninth grade in high school.
Yeah, like 13, 14, around there. And that was a long time ago. And on DS, during that Q1, we had three Nintendo releases, although I think these are, like, some of these are games that we'd probably see as eShop games now. You got Hotel Dusk, which came out in January. WarioWare Master of Disguise came out in March. And Custom Robo Arena, which also came out in March. I've never played any of those games.
I haven't played any of these.
To be completely honest. I've always wanted to check out Hotel Dusk.
I own it, actually. I guess I have played it for maybe 10 minutes.
I almost bought it. I almost bought it used recently, but I figured I'll wait until I actually play 999. That's been sitting on my to-play pile for a long time. Also, The World Ends With You is another game.
Yeah, you should get to that pile. One first.
About Fire Emblem.
I see.
Some of the other releases in Q1 2007, Phoenix Wright Justice for All came out in January, Spectrobes came out in March, and Lost in Blue 2 came out in March. Keep in mind, these aren't exhaustive lists. I might have missed something. If I did miss something egregious, totally write in and tell me how I missed it, because I'd honestly be curious. All honesty, Q1 2007 for DS, a little on the weaker side, but on Wii, I mean, for coming right off the console's launch, that's kind of what I expect. And that's what makes Q1 2013 for the Wii U so depressing.
I mean, I'm looking over, we have a spreadsheet up with all the different lists right now, and I think that this Q1 here looks the weakest out of all of them, and it's really depressing
to see
that.
I definitely agree.
As it's even it's better than what we're facing right now.
Yeah. And I mean, that there is something to be said about, you know, that period right after a launch is always going to be dead, whether you like it or not. But it's still kind of disheartening, especially after Nintendo said repeatedly, or specifically Satoru Iwata, made the comments about how, right after the Wii U, it's going to be different. We're not going to make the same mistakes we made with the 3DS. And voila, they made the same exact mistakes as they
made
with the 3DS.
Their problem was creating that term launch window.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would be a lot more positive about Q1 2013 on the Wii U if I didn't expect... I mean, not that I truly expected it once we got closer to it, but they did say that Pikmin 3, Wonderful 101, and Wii Fit U would all be out by the end of March 2013, back in September, and they reiterated that until, I think, like, the system came out. So, the two-month window when they're like, this is what's going to happen, and no, that's not. At least Japan was a little more realistic. They were giving those games a spring release.
Yeah.
So I'd actually say the blame probably falls squarely on Nintendo of America, because they're the people that held to that launch window concept for games that clearly weren't making the launch window. So moving on to Q1 2008, we've got on the Wii, Endless Ocean came out in January, and Super Smash Bros. Brawl came out in March. I think just the inclusion of Brawl makes that a hell of a Q1.
Despite it did get pushed back, I think, like, almost last second, a couple weeks, right? If I remember.
Yeah, I think it was slated for December initially.
I thought it was like a February release.
And then
it got pushed back like 2 weeks before launch. Yeah.
Yep. Because the Japanese one, I think, was supposed to come out in January and wound up coming out in February. Yeah. Even still, I mean, only two games, but those are two solid games on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Indeed.
I
would have been content with just Super Smash Bros. Brawl. Well, I should say I was because I didn't pick up Endless Ocean. So,
I loved Endless Ocean 2, which we'll get to, I think, in about two Q1s. But the other third-party games that came out in Q1 2008, we got Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, the Phoenix Wright kind of parody of a fantastic cartoon that Patrick has not seen, but I actually recently watched a bunch of last weekend, and I love me some Harvey Birdman. We had Sonic Riders Zero Gravity, No More Heroes, which is a pretty excellent third-party release. You had the Bully remake, which was also, by all accounts, really solid. Sega and Superstars Tennis, which was a March release, which was actually my first review for this site. Gave it a 7.5. I enjoyed that game. And then House of the Dead 2 and 3, the kind of light gun compilation of two arcade games. It's a pretty solid Q1 for Wii.
There's a lot of stuff there for everyone, I guess. No More Heroes got your more hardcore rated M, if I can use those terms.
Yeah. You got a racing game. You got a quirky courtroom comedy simulator. You got a tennis game. You got light gun games. Sega had a hell of a Q1 that year.
Was Sonic Riders, was that kind of like a precursor to Sonic and All-Stars Racing. Same vein type of thing. No.
I think that was a Sonic Team joint. Sega Superstars Tennis was actually, I think, a precursor to that.
I just mean, was Sonic Riders like a racing game as Sonic characters? Is that what it was?
It was like you were on like a airboard or something. It was pretty dumb. Really, the tennis game is kind of a precursor to that, because that also had, you know, a whole variety of Sega characters as opposed to just Sonic. On DS, you really only had one Nintendo release, and that was Advance Wars Days of Ruin. Just the last appearance of Advance Wars. I've been kind of meaning to pick this game up, because I've never played it. I played a bunch of Advance Wars DS kind of recently, the first one, and really enjoyed
that. I picked this one up, and while I enjoyed it, I didn't like it nearly as much as the first DS game. Just something about it where it didn't feel as fluid.
It's not, I mean, it's the one that's not cartoony, so, you know, there's something lost there. Some of the other releases on DS, we had Rune Factory 2, Nano Stray 2, Etrian Odyssey 2, Space Invaders Extreme, Super Dodgeball Brawlers, and Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword. Etrian Odyssey 2 is kind of humorous because almost exactly 5 years later, we're getting the fourth game on 3DS in February.
I'm curious where the third one fell.
And you're on the review for that. I think it was also a Q1 game. I'm not going to peek ahead, but I'm pretty sure it was.
We'll find out.
Actually, no, that might have been like a September release. I forget. I remember when that game came out, but I don't remember when it was. So, you know, DS, you definitely can kind of tell with DS compared to 3DS that 3DS is kind of, I guess, less of like sideshow. I don't want to denigrate the DS because the DS is a fantastic system. But it seems like with the 3DS, the games are kind of like not as ignored, if that makes sense.
I think there's a lot of the 3DS, there's more eShop stuff. Like looking over this list, I'm thinking maybe Space Invaders Extreme, Super Dodge Brawlers, those types of things would probably be eShop releases.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Stray 2, same boot there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a precursor to Nano Assault, so. And that is coming to the eShop. That might be a Q1. We don't know, because we don't really know when eShop games are coming out until, like, a few days before.
I'm just looking at it, and if you took those games out of the list and then looked at it again, it would just be about the same thing as what we have now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in Q1 2009, we had a bunch of releases, a lot of really good third-party ones, like you had the Tenchu game, which, you know, it's a solid stealth game, Deadly Creatures, which is that weird game where you could be like a scorpion or a spider, which didn't really totally do it for me, but I kind of love that idea of that game. House of the Dead Overkill, which was our site's favorite third-party Wii game and my personal favorite as well. The Dead Rising remake, which I don't think was as bad as everyone said it was. Still not, I mean, it's weird because it's like a downport of a 360 game. Sonic and the Black Knight, which, unlike Sonic and the Secret Rings, is a total piece of shit. Mad World, which is a fun game.
Mad World? This is that Q1 where I did not get anything.
Okay. Well, there wasn't, I mean, it's not that like there wasn't a whole lot to get. It's just that there wasn't anything marquee.
There was nothing that I
wanted. Sega had another huge push because they had, you know, House of the Dead, Sonic, and Mad World. I mean, Mad World's a fun game. I really, really dug it when I first played it, and I totally get why people don't like it as much. But for me, like, the first time you play that game in all its 4 hours of power, it's a great game. And then if you ever try to go back and replay that game, it is not a good game.
It's one of those things where I've always heard good things about it. It's just never interested me enough to go out and pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ever feel like it's mercilessly killing a lot of people and have it be very bloody and kind of fun, then check that game out. It's probably
Couldn't I just get Bayonetta for that? Isn't that the same thing, basically?
Maybe. I mean, it is made by the same people. I forget who was the director on Mad World. I don't know if it was Kamiya. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. Was that? That might have been a Naba.
I couldn't tell you.
yeah.
We need Tyler.
I don't know. We also had Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Echoes of Time, which was a Crystal Chronicles game that I believe also had a DS release, if that's the one I'm thinking about. And that was the one that had the weird, like, you could play the Wii and the DS together online or something. Or not online, but just, like, someone could have the DS version and someone could have the Wii version and you could all play. And the only two Nintendo releases in Q1 2009 were New Play Control Pikmin and New Play Control Mario Tennis, Mario Power Tennis, which is kind of a fucking travesty. And I think that's probably the weakest Q1, even weaker than the, I don't know, at least from a Nintendo standpoint, I think that's even weaker because, like, there's not an original Wii game throughout this entire
quarter. One of those people that only buys Nintendo published games, you basically lost out there. Unless you wanted to replay games you probably already played.
Yep.
But, yeah.
I mean, this was, I think 2009 in general was kind of a weak year for Nintendo. That might have been, they were focusing a lot on Motion
Plus. Was 2009 when Galaxy came out, or was that 2008?
No, that was 2007. Because that was right before Brawl. I mean, if you've kind of noticed, especially with GameCube and Wii, there's about like a year after the system comes out, it's like there's this kind of like flurry of awesome games. Like if you look up, so GameCube came out late 2001. August 2002, Sunshine came out. Metroid Prime came out in November. And then Wind Waker was in March. So you had that like 6 month period, or a little more than 6 months, where you just had, you know, a lot of great games coming out. With Wii, you had the same kind of thing because you had, it went, you know, November 2007 was Galaxy, and then you had Brawl in March, then you had Wii Fit and Mario Kart coming out in April and May. And even 3DS kind of had the same kind of thing, except for I would say that might have been a little closer, where it was just kind of like, you know, 3D Land, Mario Kart, and Kid Icarus all kind of
within that
in
year.
A row.
Or...
Yeah, and then then there was a lull afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
That was the same thing with Wii, because I think 2008 was the year of Animal Crossing, if memory serves me. Yeah, that was Animal Crossing and Wii Music. 2009 wound up, later that year, that was New Super Mario Brothers Wii. So that was a lot, much better.
Looking to today, I guess you could say the same thing about Wii U, because here we are a couple months after launch, and soon, at least, we'll get Pikmin 3, Wonderful 101.
Yeah.
Wii Fit, U.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we should be heading to a flurry of releases just because that's, well, I have a feeling with this we'll get, like, a small flurry and then a bigger flurry in the fall. So on DS during 2009, the two Nintendo releases were Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon, which, you know, 4 years before the next Fire Emblem game came out in North America. Seems like there's certain windows for certain games. And then Pokemon Platinum is a March release. And then third-party games, you had the Renegade Kid-developed first-person shooter Moon, Retro Game Challenge, Dragon Quest V, Puzzle Quest Galactrix, GTA Chinatown Wars, and Valkyrie Profile. I think that is a subtitle, but I did not write it down. This is when the DS is kind of amazing. I can look at that, and there are like four games that are fantastic. And I don't even play Platinum at all, but like Shadow Dragon, Dragon Quest V, Chinatown Wars, and Retro Game Challenge, all really great games.
I only played Retro Game Challenge on that list, actually. Like, Chinatown Wars was one of those things where it was another one of those, like, Mad World games where I just never got around to it.
Yeah. Yeah, Chinatown Wars, for what it is in, like, you know, a GTA game on DS.
Wasn't there a lot of top-down stuff? Okay.
Yeah, well, that's how it was. But it was great. Like, it is a really, really surprising
game.
It
was a GTA game designed around the hardware specifically.
Yeah. Yep. And then it wound up, like, I think it was ported to PSP and iOS or something. But the DS version I still think is the best. Now we get to 2010, which was another kind of weak Q1 for Nintendo on Wii. Because the only game they really had was Endless Ocean 2. And then across the board, we had a whole bunch of games, though. We had Skycrawlers, The Innocent Aces, Tatsunoko vs. Capcom, No More Heroes 2, Shirin the Wanderer, Super Monkey Ball Step'n'Roll, Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, Mega Man 10 coming out on WiiWare, Calling, Fragile Dreams, and Red Steel 2. That's a pretty great Q1. I mean, I love Red Steel 2. To this day, that's one of my favorite third-party Wii games. I think that game's excellent.
I think it's interesting. Weren't Calling and Fragile Dreams both kind of that survival horror game?
Yeah. Calling, I think I reviewed that, but if I recall, that was like a weird first-person game in a school with like weird dolls. And Fragile Dreams is kind of this post-apocalyptic thing.
It just feels like the same kind of survival horror released both in March.
I've always been curious about Fragile Dreams, but I've always been kind of put off by it because it seems like it's kind of a little bit obtuse, as far as I can tell. And it also was kind of hard to find, so I just gave up after a while because I was like, I don't even know if I'd really enjoy this anyway. Yeah, and then Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing was really, really good. Always wanted to kind of play the Sheer and the Wanderer game on Wii. Kind of also falls into a Fragile Dreams category. No More Heroes 2 I was a little disappointed by.
I'm guessing you played Mega Man 10 too, right?
Yeah. Oh, I love Mega Man 10. I think I like that more than 9. Yeah. It's free on PS Plus.
It's just a matter of me turning on my PlayStation.
Yeah. I played the Sly 4 demo and immediately became sold on that game after playing the demo.
The problem I'm running into with Plus is there's just too much, and I just don't even bother downloading it now.
Yeah. It's like every week there's another fucking game. It's amazing. I usually download it all just so I don't miss out on it if it gets taken down. I think I might have missed out on Darksiders, because I think after the THQ shenanigans, it might have been taken down before I could download it.
For those that own a PlayStation, I think right now you can buy 15 months of PlayStation Plus for the price of 12 months. So,
yeah, it's well worth it. It's probably my favorite thing about PS or just Sony in general. I have a new Ninja Gaiden game to play on Vita too. That's cool. But anyway, DS in 2010, you had Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver and WarioWare DIY were the two Nintendo releases during that period. Oh, and also Glory of Heracles. That was another Nintendo release.
I did not know that was a Nintendo release.
An 8-4 joint. Yeah, it's actually like a... I believe it's a sequel to some NES game that never came out in America. it's an RPG. In January, you had Sands of Destruction, a Sega... I think it was a strategy RPG. Ace Attorney Investigations, which is a fantastic game. One that... I think I kind of like better than some of the regular Ace Attorney games, especially just because it kind of changed up the formula. And then you had Sonic Classic Collection, which was a compilation of Sonic games that, as far as I knew, ran like total shit on DS. Infinite Space, which is the weird Platinum Games, like a strategy space game. I think James Jones got hardcore into it. And then at the time, the newest entry in the Mega Ten series, Strange Journey. This was a Q1 where I pretty much only... I played Pokemon and Ace Attorney. I don't even know what I was doing during Q1 2010, but I feel like I didn't play as many games.
I feel like this is that period where
I think I was
there
finishing,
wasn't enough for me.
Yeah, I was finishing school then. Yeah.
Like I picked up Heart Gold, Soul Silver, but besides that, nothing really there that interested me.
Yeah. And now, in Q1 2011, we kind of get to the dry spell, if you will. I'd say, you know, 11 to 12 to 13 across the board was kind of weak. And that's mainly because the third parties left. On Wii, in Q1 2011, really the only game that came out from Nintendo on Wii was Mario Sports Mix. And this was kind of the beginning of the end for the Wii. I believe there was a big stretch of time in Q1 2011 where there was like 3 retail releases on Wii or something. The other games that came out during that period were You Don't Know Jack, which you can probably find dirt cheap on just about any system, and it's totally worth it. That game's amazing.
I still play it on Facebook occasionally.
Yeah, I have that. I got the Wii version on like a Target end aisle, and I've played it a bunch, and it's so much fun. And it's great on Wii because you do kind of you have the remote, so it's like just having a buzzer. Diablo 2 came out in February 2011. I really, really love that game, and I'm even more sad about how that developer doesn't exist. And if anyone has a spare couple thousand dollars, anyone want to go in on getting the DeBlob license from the THQ Legacy auction? Anybody? Write into connectivity at nintendoworldreport.com. If you feel my DeBlob sadness, there's probably at least two of you. I really enjoyed those games.
I had only ever played the first one, and I didn't really like it.
Yeah. I mean, the second one improved some things, but if you didn't like the first one, you're probably not going
to
like it.
Every single level was just more of the same to me, and just not my thing.
Lego Star Wars 3 also came out in March on Wii, and then Tiger Woods 12. That was it. Like, I think that's an all-inclusive list. I'm not missing anything. On DS, it was a great last hurrah for that system. I'm just going to read off just the DS games that came out in that period, because it's incredible. You had from Capcom, you had Ghost Trick in January, along with Kingdom Hearts Recoded from Square Enix in January. In February, Dragon Quest VI came out on DS, published by Nintendo, and that's the first time that game was ever playable in North America. Radiant Historia, which I think is probably the best RPG on the system. And then in March, you had Pokemon Black and White, you had Okami Den, and Monster Tail. That is amazing, that Q1 for DS. And then the 3DS came out and had like four games worth playing.
Which four are you referencing there?
I don't know. I mean, I was saying more in the longer tail, but like Pilot Wings. Okay, maybe it's just Pilot Wings.
I picked up Street Fighter with
my 3DS. Some people liked Street Fighter was pretty good. Ghost Recon Shadow Wars, for what it was, a lot of people seem to like that a lot. I'm
sure
like
you could find at least one person that likes Steel Diver too, somewhere out there.
Yeah, I think Zach Kaplan likes Steel Diver. I know his net handle in some places is Steel Diver.
That's really great.
I think he changed his Twitter name to Steel Diver. Steel Diver was neat, but like that would have been great as an eShop game. I think if that was just an eShop game, it would be.
I wonder if that was their plan initially, and then they didn't have the eShop up and running yet.
Maybe. Like, it's not even available as an eShop download now. It's
because no one wants it.
yeah. Because I was going to say, I know, at least in Japan, I think there's only, like, I don't think Nintendogs is a retail download yet. I don't think Steel Diver is, and Kid Icarus is.
I think Nintendogs just came out, or is that just in North America?
Okay. Maybe that came out. Maybe that was one of the last holdovers. But I know Steel Diver and Kid Icarus aren't on there yet. So now we move to Q1 2012. And as far as I know, there were literally only three Wii games that came out in Q1 2012. So it's almost as... actually, it's still better than Q1 2013 for Wii U. I mean, you had Rhythm Heaven Fever, which is incredible. You had Poke Park 2, which I don't really remember hearing anything about that. I know Zach loved the first one. I don't know how his feelings were on the second
Zach Miller?
One. I forget.
He liked Poke Park. That's...
Yeah. I mean, I remember playing... I don't think I ever played a demo for 2, but I played a demo for 1 at E3. And it was fun for what it was, because you just control a Pokemon and run around, and every now and then like you get in a fight or play a minigame. Like, it's nothing amazing, but I kind of see the appeal, because that sounds like a fun thing to dick around with for an hour or two. And then Mario Party 9 came out in Q1 2012, and that's easily the best Mario Party game there is.
The best.
Yes, easily.
Like, better than the N64 Mario Parties.
Yes.
I haven't played it yet. Oh.
I've been talking so highly of this game. The only time I ever played it was before I sent the review copy to Pedro. It was a Friday. We got it on a Friday, I believe. So I had a couple friends over, and we played it all night.
That's
Friday.
The only time you've played it?
Yes, but it was so much fun. And then I sent it to Pedro on Saturday, and it was kind of like, well, I don't want to spend $50 on that, but I do want to get it at some point. And I've been keeping an eye on it. Still see it for $50 everywhere, because it's fucking Mario Party.
At least it wasn't like $60 when it came with the mic, I think, that time.
Yeah. I really hope that, because last year at PAX East, you know, it was like less than a month after this game came out, And when we were in the free play area, Scott, Lauren, and I were actually looking to play Mario Party 9. We wound up playing Mario Party 8, which just kind of juxtaposed how fucking terrible Mario Party 8 is to Mario Party 9. But I hope that this year they actually have it, because that would be a great game to free play with people.
Mario Party 5. It's my favorite.
I think we could in the retro room. I can't wait for you to go to PAX East, yeah. Man.
I got to get my car working.
Be tons
get
of my fun.
Car working real good.
And on 3DS, I thought this Q1 was pretty good, although for Nintendo-wise, it was a little weaker. It was mainly the eShop kind of made this a lot better. On eShop, you had stuff like Mutant Muds, Dylan's Rolling Western, Lucifer Samurai came out
you
around this
time, too.
You could
almost call VVVVVV a Q1 release.
Yeah. Yeah, VVVVVV came out like December
27th,
2011. Maybe. I don't know. Something like that.
Something real weird.
And then retail-wise, you had Resident Evil Revelations, Tales of the Abyss, Tekken 3D Prime Edition, Metal Gear Solid 3D, Kid Icarus Uprising, and Crush 3D. I mean, that's a pretty solid lineup. Maybe not from Nintendo, because Kid Icarus was kind of their only release. But still a very solid lineup.
I really liked Revelations and Tales of the Abyss. I mean...
Yeah. I liked Revelations plenty. I loved Mutant Muds. Tekken 3D is an abomination that should offend any discerning gamer. Metal Gear Solid 3D was the nail in the coffin in that I'm not really into Metal Gear at all. I don't know. I can't get into it. And Kid Icarus Uprising is kind of like, you know, vindication for my entire life.
Do you have anything to say about Dylan's Rolling Western?
Is bad. The aesthetic is awesome. Like, I just want to see that universe in a different game. That would make me very happy. Now we get to Q1 2013. And really, I mean, that the main releases on Wii U, we got Rayman Legends and Lego City Undercover. Lego City Undercover is coming out on my birthday, March 18th.
That's sooner than
and
I
then
remember.
We have...
For some reason, I thought it was in May.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the 3DS version.
Yeah, the 3DS one is late April.
Or, yeah, that's not it.
Which is weird because it's a prequel. But anyway. And then, you know, the third party... Well, you got Rayman Legends as a third party game. Then you have Monster Hunter 3, Need for Speed Most Wanted. You even have Pandora's Tower. Although that might be an April release. I don't think a release date's confirmed yet. I think it's kind of rumored for late March or April. And then you got stuff like The Cave, Runner 2, and you know, Toki Tori 2 should be out, Zen Pinball 2. But really, retail-wise, like, we're at the end of January, and, I mean, we had The Cave come out.
There hasn't been a retail release since Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy back in early December.
What was that, December? Is that December
11th? Sometime in the first half of the month.
Yeah, because I know Avengers was December 4th. I think so was 007 Legends. Those games aren't even good. Like, come on now. I mean, the Wii U, it's a barren wasteland. It should get better. If you believe Nintendo, then it should get better real fast after Q1. Because Wii Fit U, The Wonderful 101, and Pikmin 3 are apparently coming out in like a two-week period.
And by that time, the eShop should be in a better full swing.
I mean, as I said at the beginning of this segment, I think we're really close to having a new game on the eShop
every
week.
That's all I want. That moment when the 3DS hit that threshold.
Yeah. I mean, even if the games, like, Puddle, for example, comes out tomorrow, which you reviewed, and, I guess, talk about that game a little bit, because it is a Q1 2013 release.
I mean, it's really similar to Fluidity. That's the biggest comparison I could probably draw. I've only played Fluidity Spin Cycle, but you just control different liquids, moving them left and right, you control tilting with the ZL and ZR triggers, and you just kind of use physics. It's a physics platformer, just moving liquid around.
I remember playing a demo for that, because that came out on pretty much everything. I played a demo for it on Vita and did not really enjoy it, but maybe I'll check out the Wii.
I like it.
We do have that extra code.
I like it more than Fluidity just because of the variety of stuff it has you do. Because you take on different liquids, I guess. Like some levels you're playing as nitroglycerin, and then you can't run into things too quickly, or it makes you explode.
That's kind of funny.
You change liquids like every two or three levels, too, so there's always something new. Yeah,
that's cool. Does it feel like tech demo-y?
That's one of the problems where, like, each idea isn't really fleshed out.
So it's like Night Sky.
Yeah, exactly. exactly like that.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to check that game out, because especially at least just to see how it compares to Fluidity more. And I did. Can you play gamepad
yes,
only?
Can.
Awesome. Every game should have that.
Every review I write, I just feel like it's a pro.
Yeah, it really is. But yeah, Q1 2013 for Wii U. Eh. On 3DS though, it's pretty ballin'. We got Fire Emblem Awakening. Our review for that just went up today. Scott loved the shit out of it. He gave it a 9.5. I cannot wait for this game, to the point that I think I'm going to download it at midnight on Sunday night, as opposed to waiting for a physical copy. Because I have it pre-ordered at GameStop, but GameStop told me that they won't get it in until Tuesday, which I say, fuck you.
I hate Fire Emblem. Like, I just always hate that concept of losing characters. And this may be the first one that I really play.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wrote the article for the site recently about how I played the entire first Fire Emblem game in my high school economics class. And that's the only one I've ever beaten. I only played Sacred Stones because of the Ambassador Program, and I legitimately fell asleep while playing that recently because the dialogue takes a while. And I know you can skip it, but I was like trying to read it and then just passed out. And then woke up like 15 minutes later and be like, oh, this guy's still talking. But I really dug Shadow Dragon. I played the Wii one. I like that too. Never finished those. I'm really, really excited for Awakening though. It's been a while since I kind of got really, really into one of those games. I mean, it's been a while since any of them came out. The last one was Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon.
Wasn't that a remake, too?
Early 2009. Yeah, that was a remake of, like, the first one. That one has Marth in it, and this one just has, like, someone posing to be evil Marth or something. I don't know the lore. And then Brain Age Concentration Training comes out on February 10th. I'm kind of excited for that game. I played the demo, and I thought the exercise that they showed off, the devilish calculations, was really neat. And I think I might read reviews more and see how people like it. But I think it's something that I'll probably get, just because, especially having that digitally, that would be awesome to have.
I want to wait and see how the full package is compared to like one or two mini games.
Yep, yep. And then we have Luigi's Mansion, which I can't wait for. I'm so, so excited for that, especially with the announcement of multiplayer.
Yeah, I hope it's another Kid Icarus. Like, March, hopefully we gather around and just play Luigi's Mansion for, say, a month or two.
Well, keep in mind, for anyone who might be going to PAX East, the weekend, March 22nd to 24th, keep in mind when Luigi's Mansion comes out. That is Sunday, March 24th. And keep in mind that we are hosting a panel on that very day. Our panel is 11 a.m. Or is it 12:30? Shit. Yeah, it's 11 a.m. Or is it 12? Crap. Yeah, 11 a.m.
March 24th.
Yes, March 24th at the Arachnid Theater. We're doing Who Wants to Be a Nintendoware? And maybe, just maybe, if you are the best Nintendoware player there, you might win a copy of this game, or at least the equivalent in eShop credit to go get this game, or Pokemon Mystery Dungeon if you hate yourself.
I think Pokemon Mystery Dungeon looks cool. I kind of want it. I've never played one of those games before, and I think this might be the one.
If you've never played one of those games, then maybe try it out, but I've kind of made my conclusion about especially that series. I mean, it seems like they're doing something a little bit new and maybe better. I'm still wary.
Maybe I'll hold off and wait for reviews. Seems to be my tune lately.
But even still, I would kind of hope that we have review copies of, or at least review copy of Luigi's Mansion by PAX East. And I'm slated to review that game, and I will be at PAX East, and there is download play.
Single card
so
download
if you're
play?
Real curious.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So if you're real curious about Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon's multiplayer, come to PAX East and find me on Friday or Saturday, and we can totally play. Either that, or we can just play Kid Icarus, because I've been hankering for that a lot. And the Monster Hunter 3, are you gonna go down that rabbit hole?
I'm gonna probably get the Wii U version. Like,
I'm on the fence. I think, like, I don't know. I was kind of reading about it and thinking about it, listening to the 8-4 guys talk about it because they're big Monster Hunter zealots. And this is the kind of game that I feel like I'll probably end up getting both and hating myself for it. Maybe not right away. And I think what I'd probably do is get the Wii U version to start. And if I get really into it, then I might end up getting the 3DS version too.
I may end up
having that ability to switch between the both is kind of awesome, but I kind of hate that you have to buy both versions. Because, for example, I mean, with Sly 4, which I don't know if I'll get it when it comes out next week, but I plan on getting that game soon, and that has cross-buy, where you buy the PS3 version and you get the Vita version. And, you can switch save data. And to me, that's really, really cool. And that's a $40 game that comes with both. For Monster Hunter Tri, or Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, or whatever it's called, like, you need to drop, $100 to get both copies of the game? I don't know if I can get behind that. But I can probably get behind one of those.
I couldn't get behind it right away. I'd have to wait maybe a month or two. Once you've exhausted maybe all that you can do in one version and you just want more Monster Hunter, then maybe you go do it.
Well, as far as I know, it's just the exact same game. It's just that you can switch save files between...
For 40 or 60 extra dollars, I don't think that's worth it. Just for that feature.
Yeah. But I would kind of wish I had friends that were into Monster Hunter, because then you could do one person playing on Wii U and people playing on 3DS.
That's what I'm very excited for, because my friends don't play a lot of video games, but they play Monster Hunter.
maybe we do another live stream.
Yes.
Maybe we do one of those again.
Actually show up.
Yeah. We can play some Monster Hunter. I know Josh Max would already be at my apartment if he knew that I was
playing. He's the one knocking
that
on your door right now.
Yeah. Well, Josh, how did you get here? He's a huge fan. I believe he will be reviewing the 3DS version. Now, Alex Calafi is on one of the versions, and Josh is as well. Josh is a Monster Hunter veteran. But yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up for this segment as we kind of started spitballing about other Q1 games. Do you have any final thoughts about our look through Q1s through the ages? Do you have a favorite Q1?
I just don't think you finished reading off all the other 3DS games. Etrian Odyssey 4 in February, Sonic Racing Transformed in February, and Castlevania Mirror of Fate? Faith? I can't remember.
Trying to think.
I can't remember the subtitle.
Aaron just saw, it's Castlevania Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate. Aaron just saw this game, but I think even by the time this episode is up, the embargo won't be up. I think the embargo is next Monday or something. I don't think it would be spoiling too much to say that he was kind of impressed by the game. He'll have full impressions up whenever the embargo is up. But I know I have a lot of reservations about that game, and they're starting to be washed away. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what people thought who went to that event. It seems like that game might be cool.
Maybe. I didn't like the E3 demo, but...
I hated the E3 demo.
Well, that's good to hear.
Too combat heavy. Too combat heavy. And Etrian Odyssey 4, I'm pretty excited for.
Yeah.
Never played one of those games, and I've always been curious.
And all I know is people keep telling me I have to be ready to sink a lot of time into it. But I guess it is a long game.
Yeah. All right, so just kind of scanning over this list, what do you think your favorite Q1 is? And I guess you could kind of do portable and home console. I think my portable would have to be the DS in 2011. Yeah, 2011, because Ghost Trick and Radiant Historia are two of my favorite games on the system.
I think I'd go 2012 for 3DS.
I think that would probably be in the top three easily.
In 2011, all I had gotten during that Q1 was Okamiden Pokemon Black White. So,
yeah.
I still haven't played Radiant Historia or Ghost Trick.
Oh, Ghost Trick is so good.
It's on my list to get.
And I think for Wii, or at least, home console, I think it would be 2008 or 2009. In 2008, I mean, you had Brawl, you had No More Heroes, you had that Harvey Birdman game, and even Endless Ocean. But the thing with 2009 is that even though Nintendo's output was pretty terrible, I feel like Sega's output kind of made up for that. Because they had Overkill, Mad World, and then you even had THQ with Deadly Creatures, the Tenchu game.
See, 2009 wasn't really for me, so I'd probably lean on 2008 more so.
Yeah. I mean, I think Brawl is kind of the big swear.
I really like Bully, too. That. So, that's just another factor.
But yeah, I think that is an episode of, or that is a segment on connectivity. And, write in if you have any questions or comments about our look through Q1 through the ages. And we'll see you guys real soon.
Come see us at PAX.
Hi. Yeah. March 24th, 11 a.m. Get your tickets. Sunday's still available.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
This segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. Today I'm joined by Mike Sklens.
Hello.
And Patrick Barnett.
Hi.
And we're just going to be talking about all the games we've been playing lately. A lot of different games, actually. Some brand new, some not out yet, some a little bit older, but nothing very old, I don't think. I guess I normally wouldn't start with myself, but I guess I will just because of the game I am talking about.
Yeah, you have the biggest one, so.
So I guess I should probably open with that. So no offense, guys. But yeah, I've been playing and beaten and reviewed Fire Emblem Awakening. If you haven't already, you can see my review on the site. I give it a 9.5. I'm very, very happy with it.
How did you feel about previous Fire Emblem games?
Sure, I've always liked Fire Emblem, but I've actually never beaten any Fire Emblem game. I really enjoy them. I mean, I love tactical strategy games. I mean, a few weeks ago I was talking about XCOM and how that was on my, like, you know, favorite games of 2012. So I definitely love the genre. I don't know what it is about past Fire Emblems that has sort of kept me from beating them.
I feel the same way about them. I know I had gotten, what's the one they gave out with on the Ambassador program?
Sacred Stones.
Yeah, I got sucked into that one for like an entire Thanksgiving, like long weekend, like 4 days straight. And then after that, I just never played it again.
Never go back to it. Right. Yeah. And that's how I've always been. I've played Sacred Stones. I've played the GameCube, I think Path of Radiance, and then the Wii game Radiant Dawn. I played all of them and never beat any of them.
I've played, I think, 4 at this point, and I've always just kind of quit halfway through because it just gets too difficult for me, and I can't risk losing characters.
Yeah, I feel bad about losing characters, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, you never want to see those characters die, and if you can't either win battles without letting anyone die, or you can't just accept that characters are going to die and just keep moving through the game, then yeah, you're definitely just going to hit a roadblock and stop. But I guess the nice thing about Awakening is that you have the option to turn permadeath off.
Can you change that setting like any time during the game, or is it
no? Which is something I've been thinking about recently. Yeah, it's something I've been thinking about recently. How that might be kind of cool. But then again, I guess that would just let you kind of, I don't know. I kind of like the fact that it just puts it up front and then that's it. I mean, I feel like it's almost not like cheating, but I don't know. If you could just turn it off at will because you're having a hard time, I think it kind of cheapens the experience.
Does the experience actually change if you have it turned on or off?
Not in terms of, like, story or anything like that.
So you don't get, like, a better ending or something with it on?
No, no. I mean, not that I know. I didn't play through it twice with the other mode. But as far as I can tell, no, it's all the same. But I can't imagine playing it with permadeath off. I'm actually going to write a feature about this that'll maybe go up the day this podcast goes up. But the thing about Fire Emblem that I think is so great are those moments where you're looking at the percentage chance you have a hidden enemy, the percentage chance that he'll hit you back, and you kind of weigh those options. And you sit there because you know if you make the wrong move, this character is going to die. And it's either, you know, you move on without him or you have to restart the whole battle. And so, I mean, there's just minutes where you're sitting there looking at these percentiles and just sort of frozen and don't know what to do until finally you just sort of close your eyes, press the A button, and just hope for the best. Hope, you know, the just dice roll in your favor in a way. And I did that a lot in Awakening, and I love that feeling. And I kind of, I don't know. I mean, I feel like you kind of lose something playing without that fear, you know?
Yeah, the fear is definitely an element. Now, I guess I assume, like most normal people, you keep the battle animations turned on.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I always thought it was funny that there was an option to turn those off. Like, who out there is, like, so into Fire Emblem that they're like, I don't have time for the animations.
Yeah, I just got to get into those battles.
It's all about the numbers for me. I don't... This could be on paper and I would still play it.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. And you can turn those off again. One nice thing is while you're playing, you can hold the A button down and it will make everything move twice as fast, though. So I left battle animations on, but during enemy encounters, I would pretty much hold the A button the entire time just to kind of speed through it and get to my turn faster. But I would still watch everything, which is kind of cool. But yeah, I don't know. So, Patrick, I mean, you could play without the permadeath. If you chose to, and that would be fine.
I just don't want to run into a situation where I'm halfway through the game, and you said it's like about 30 hours, right?
It took me 30 hours, yeah, but I definitely didn't do all the side stuff.
So I don't want to dump 15 hours into this experience, and then I get stuck, and then I'd have to replay that 15 hours just to get caught back up to where I was.
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess you could play on casual. I don't know. I would tell anyone who really can't get over the permadeath thing to go ahead and do it, because it is a really good game, and I thought the story was pretty interesting, more so than any Fire Emblem game I've played. I love the production value of these awesome animated cutscenes, and just the characters are pretty well realized as well. And the 3D models are great, and yeah, I mean, it's just a fun game to play. So if you're really afraid of that, then just go ahead and play on the casual mode, as they call it. But
it's nice they have that option now, because
yeah,
that is something, like, you know, I actually kind of like I'm a hardcore Rock Band player. I play on expert all the time, but if I'm having a bunch of friends over, I just turn No Fail Mode on. Like,
right, absolutely. It's perfect.
I'm curious, Mike, what instrument do you play? Just a side
guitar. Just guitar.
I didn't know if you were drumming.
I've been playing guitar since Guitar Hero. I was really good at the drums for a while, but then I actually ended up fucking hurting my wrist because I played them too much, so now I don't play drums. And I suck at keys. I don't ever really touch them.
I never played the keyboard. I never got far enough into Rock Band to Rock Band 3, where the keyboards came into it. But
I'm a decent singer.
I can actually play the piano, so I've never tried out the keyboard, and I always wanted to.
It's probably easy. You only play the right-hand part, so.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. But, Patrick, I don't know if this game is just maybe a little easier, but I mean, I beat the whole game without any character dying.
Were you ever in a situation where you were like, should I have to start this battle over?
Oh, plenty. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were a few battles I probably started off over four or five times.
And then once you figure out what the enemy's general strategy is, because it does kind of stick the same, like, oh, the big thing here is tanks, or, well, not tanks, because it's medieval, but you know what I mean.
Right, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you kind of recognize patterns, and then you learn from your mistakes, so, like, maybe you're playing a level, and then all of a sudden reinforcements come in from, like, where you started. So they come in behind you. And
so,
like,
yeah, next time you do the battle, you're like, I can prepare for this.
Absolutely. So you move all your units up. You don't leave your, like, weaker magic units in the back to get kind of flanked by that later on.
Yeah.
Or just situations like that. Yeah,
it's kind of dick of them to do that, like, haha, we're flanking you. Good luck winning now.
Yeah, and in fact, Awakening, I mean, like I said, I haven't beaten any other Fire Emblem games, so maybe later levels do this, but as you get further on, pretty much every level you can expect reinforcements at some point. Some levels it's easier to tell because they're like castle stages, and there's like staircases that lead to like the downstairs, and they always come up through those staircases, so you can just actually stand your units on those staircases, and then the reinforcements can't come. But yeah, then in other levels, like open fields and stuff, they'll just come in from the sides or the back or, yeah, all over the place, so you kind of have to be on your toes. But yeah, I think the relationship system kind of helps with the, I don't know, not letting your characters die very often. I wrote about it in my review, obviously. I think it's a big aspect of the game, but characters, as they fight next to each other and defend next to each other, their relationship builds, and then the relationship levels up. And when you stand your characters next to each other, you get stat bonuses depending on the level of that relationship. So to start off, I mean, any two units standing next to each other will automatically get a plus 10 hit bonus. So you just have two characters stand next to each other, and your chance to hit automatically goes up 10%, which is awesome. But as certain units fight together more and more, they'll level up, and then you get added bonuses on top of that. So then you'll get an increased chance to critical and an increased chance to dodge, and even an increased chance that that second unit will attack with you, and which doesn't use his turn. So if you have two units standing next to each other, your first unit will attack, and then there's a small chance that the second unit will attack as well. Maybe you'll kill the unit, and then that second unit can still make his turn, move, and attack. So there's a lot more strategy in like keeping units paired and building those relationships and keeping units with strong relationships together, because they just, of all the benefits they provide each other on the battlefield.
Is there an easy way to tell which units have good relationships, or is it kind of...
Yeah, there's a whole relationship submenu that you can access from the like the world map, the overworld map, and it'll show you all the characters that you like. So you select one character. So like if you select your main character, it'll show you every character he can build a relationship with, which your main character can build a relationship with everyone, and it'll show you the current status of that relationship. So either C, B, A, or S. And then you get more and more stat bonuses depending on the rank of that that relationship. There's no like experience bar, so you can't see like how close you are to leveling up again. But I mean, you kind of get into rhythm of it. Like every two battles, if you make those units fight together side by side for the majority of it, they'll level up. And the S relationship is strictly for classes of opposite gender. And when they hit the S relationship, they actually get married. And then they
S relationship.
Yeah. And then they have a baby, and then you can actually have that kid join your team. Yeah.
No, seriously, you can fight with babies?
Yeah, well, it's not babies. There's a little bit of time travel in the game, and so what'll happen is those two characters' kid will sort of stumble from the future into the past where you're at, and then you can recruit them. So they're like
weird
adults at that point.
That is weird.
There's a lot of time travel in the game. It's built into the game. It's actually, I thought, kind of a cool aspect of the game. There's a lot of like science fiction injected into this. Like
that is the last thing I'd expect anyone to say about a Fire Emblem game. That's crazy.
Yeah, right. There's like time travel. There's zombies. There's all kinds of stuff. It's kind of cool. It was another aspect of the story that like kind of kept me engaged.
They actually write it in as time travel.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, so the story, I mean, it's
like they use dark magic or something to travel through time.
Yeah, like what happens is in the future this evil dragon is resurrected and it basically destroys the world, and the main character's daughter comes back from that future to like prevent the things that happened that led to the dragon's resurrection. And that's pretty much it. So then she's fighting alongside her father, the prince.
Kind of like Terminator.
Yeah, I guess kind of in a way, sure. So, yeah, but then, so they, that there was like a time vortex, and now other characters are like falling through from the future. So yeah, all your characters' kids will come through and you can recruit them. So it's kind of cool. The kids like have shared characteristics of its two parents. So like it might have the same class as one of the parents, like maybe like a thief or an archer or a mage. And then like they actually kind of look like the parents, which is, they kind of did a good job of that. Like that actually does look like the face of the two characters combined. It's kind of neat. But yeah, so it's cool. But yeah, you can absolutely see which characters can develop relationships and which can't. And that way you can kind of, you know, keep certain characters together and work on their relationships. So. But those stat bonuses make a huge difference in, like, a character living or dying. So, yeah, I don't know, Patrick. I don't want to tell you to do the classic mode and then you get just mad and not be able to progress at some point. But I think you'll be okay.
I would turn it off just because I know if I really wanted to finish it, I would power through it and just keep replaying the battles. But if I could avoid it, like, if I could avoid that, just lower the stress level of the game, I think I would.
I think if I go with that, the casual, easier mode, I would probably still play it like I was playing on the
exactly. Traditional. Yeah.
It's just okay. That's a last resort if I need it.
Yeah, there's just one level that's completely fucked you over or something.
Right. Yeah, so and in that casual mode, I guess to explain, so a characters can die during a battle, but after the battle's over, they come back to life. And then you can actually save your game during the battle, so which you can't do in the classic mode. So if you make a move and it's disastrous and like two characters die and you don't think you're going to be able to finish the level now, you can just load your save and then change what you did. And
you don't have to redo the whole battle.
Right. You can just save at any point and then come back. So you could save every turn if you want and then come back if you're real.
Yeah.
I don't know. OCD about it.
I think you could do something similar to that in Advanced Wars, which is kind of similar. Tactical RPG type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I wrote my review, and not that it's a new thought, but I think, like, this Fire Emblem game, and all of them, really, it's kind of like Advanced Wars meets Pokemon. I mean, you could even sort of maybe take the Pokemon aspect out of it, but just the fact that, yeah, I mean, you've got the tactics there, and then certain units are effective against other units, and other units are weaker against certain units, and just that whole...
It's that triangle that they always do.
Exactly, yeah. So it's like swords are better against spears, and spears are better against axes, and axes are better against swords, or something like that. But yeah. That's how it goes. So, but yeah, just super impressed with the game. I think it's the best Fire Emblem game to date. It's easily the most accessible, most inviting. If you haven't played a Fire Emblem game yet, there's no reason not to go ahead and dive in. Like, if you've always been curious, you've wanted to play, but for some reason, maybe they just have scared you away with the permanent death or the difficulty or anything, then I'd say just dive right in with this one. It's really great, and you can adjust difficulty settings, you can turn on and off the permanent death, and yeah, it's just a very, very good game, very polished, and definitely worth that 9.5 I gave it. So, yeah. So I guess let's move on. Mike, why don't you talk about what you've been playing?
I've been playing Paper Mario Sticker Star, which my friend had just left with me. Like, hey, I'm not going to... Like, I started to play this game, but he's going to be busy for a while. So he's like, do you want to play it? I know you want to play it. So I'm like, yeah, sure. So I'm just going to send it back to him when I'm done. I really like it. I'm like 10 hours in, and I have like... I'll go through binges where I'll just get a game and I'll just incessantly play it until I just destroy it. And that's I feel like that's coming up on this game, but I know you guys are saying that I'm about to get to a point in the game where it stops being quite as enjoyable due to a lot of, I guess, fetch quests.
You're going to get to a point where there's so many things and it's not very clear and obvious which ones you need when, and then it just becomes a problem of running back and forth, getting things and using them where you don't think...
I will probably use a FAQ.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the kind of game where, like, I really want to play it, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to give everything the old college try, but I'm not going to, like, beat my head against the wall and be like, for, like, three or four attempts of, like, what am I doing wrong here? If I get it wrong, like, once or maybe twice, I'm going to go to the FAQ.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Yeah.
And I would almost recommend, I don't know, how I ended up playing it, I think I've talked about this before, is I just ended up reading the FAQ for the level before I played it, because not only is there an issue of what you need to bring with you, but there's just hidden sticker like things that you're going to need later on, and if you miss them, then it's not just a matter of like going to get it from your inventory. Then you have to actually go back to the level, find it, beat the level again, you know, and then go back to where you need it. So,
yeah, it's I don't know. I really like 80 to 90% of the game so far. There's a couple annoying things. I don't know why they give you coins in this game. I've got 3,500 coins right now. Why don't you just give me all the stickers for free? Because I've completely broken the coin economy. Like, I have so many coins, and nothing costs almost any coins. I've got 3,500 coins, and I think the most expensive sticker I've seen so far has been like 100 coins.
I think what the coins are for a lot is filling up that sticker museum.
I haven't gotten to that yet.
Oh, okay. Because I think you can put the thing stickers there, and if you need to rebuy all the different things...
The things, because the things are expensive, but yeah. I like how at the end of the level, the game just drops a shitload of coins on top of you, like, get all the coins right now, you've got like 4 seconds.
That's pretty awesome. I will say...
When you finish a level and you sit your 3DS down because you think you have a break, and then...
And you're like, no, the coins!
Oh man, I did that so many times. I think the coins will come into play, as you'll see, probably within the next like major boss, I ended up spending a lot on the Battle Spinner, but like
rigging. Yeah, I don't use it much right now.
Not right now, but definitely the next few like big major boss battles, you'll start to see that you need to use it.
Yeah, but even then, it only costs 3 coins a spin.
Well, but then it begins to cost more as you rig it. You know, you can like spend extra coins to slow it down and make two of them.
Oh, I don't think I've been given that option yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you'll see.
So that unlocks later.
I thought it was there right away. I thought it was there right away too. You'll have to see.
I wasn't paying enough attention to Christy when she explained it to me.
You just have to hit the X button again.
The X button, yeah, and then you put extra money in it to slow it down, and then to make two automatically match. No matter what, you'll get at least one single match.
That's good. Right now, I only use it when I need to heal.
Yeah, but yeah, it'll definitely come into handy in boss battles, but the more you use it in a single battle, the more money it costs to continue rigging it. So that's like where all my coins went. Like huge boss battles, I would always spend like thousands of coins.
Oh,
so,
wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So you'll see.
The sticker mechanic. At first I didn't. And I think the big problem with the game is they start you with like one page of stickers.
Oh yeah. So it's very easy to run out in the beginning.
Yeah. You get to two pages really quick, or starts with two and you get to three really quick. I'm at five right now, and it's pretty manageable now because I don't have too many big stickers sitting around. But
yeah.
I just got to the point where I can buy the blue door stickers, so now I have to keep like almost a whole page of those on me at all times.
Have you gone back to all the other levels?
No, not yet. Yeah. Is there good stuff behind them?
It's just a lot of different things, basically what it is.
Are there health upgrades behind any of them?
Probably.
Not that I can remember.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I didn't open all of them either. But yeah, sometimes you'll get like a good rare sticker. Sometimes you'll get a thing that you'll need later to progress in levels. And I'm sure there's health power-ups too. So
I just beat Sniffit.
I'm curious how you feel about the battles. Like, do you feel they're inconsequential? Like, they're just a waste of time?
Yeah, I find myself, if I'm in a rush, like I know, like I was playing like on my lunch break earlier today, and I had like 5 minutes left on my lunch break, and I'm like, crap, I have to get to the end of this level. I just like tried to avoid all the enemies. Because they don't do, I mean, you don't gain experience, so there's really no benefit. In fact, the only thing that really happens is that you end up losing stickers in the net, usually.
The only enemies I used to try and fight were the ones that gave you special stickers. Like, you're not at the ice world yet, but there's an enemy that gives you, like, a snowball.
Okay.
I found that item very helpful, so I just attack those guys.
I'll fight, like, the Boomerang Brothers are really good, because those boomerangs kick ass.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. But yeah, if it's just, like, they're mostly just there as kind of an obstacle because fighting them doesn't do anything.
Right. The only thing it does is give you coins when you beat the battle, especially if you do it perfectly. But you're right. I mean, you end up just wasting stickers. So it's like, do you really come out ahead? I don't know.
Well, I guess I'm coming out ahead because I have 3,500 coins.
I guess so. Yeah. So, yeah, but I agree. I think without any experience system of any kind, there was no reason.
Even if the enemy's damage and health scaled with it, at least I would feel like I was getting somewhere. And though something is changing though, because I'm at the point now where if I hit a Goomba with my mallet in the field, it just dies.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So my mallet is getting more powerful, but only outside of battles. It's weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of why that is, but you're right. Like if you go back to the first world now and you attack a Goomba, but instead of just like running into it, then
it must be tied. The amount of damage you do with your jump and your hammer must be tied to like the amount of health you have or something.
Or maybe like how many pages you have in the book or
something. Yeah, or something like that.
I think you're right. I think your base
it's got to be tied to something
more powerful. Yeah. But, I don't know. It'll be interesting. You'll have to update us again next week. Like we were saying before we started recording, I think your, like, overall exuberance for the game will kind of come down a little bit.
All right, yeah. I just beat Sniffit or Whiffit, like the little Sniffit game show, and I thought it was really fucking well written. I love it. There's a couple guys in the localization team that just put, like, really dark jokes in there sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the writing was really well done.
Yeah. There's the one joke in the Sniffit or Whiffit where they're like, we have our unpaid Sniffit or Whiffit interns hiding under these manhole covers.
Yeah.
You have to hit them with your mallet.
And I love those moments. There's a bunch in the game where like little just unexpected things come up to sort of break the routine.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like it's a fun game and like it's the world is great.
The charm is really good. The 3D absolutely. Looks it's kind of funny that a game with mostly two-dimensional graphics looks really good in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And it has great music.
Yeah, the music sticks in my head. It's just bump, 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 like all day in my head, even when I'm not playing the game.
Yeah, the music's great. Just good, and like even just good like remixes of classic tunes and everything like
that. Why can't New Super Mario Brothers have such good music?
That's what I said, yeah. I mean, it just that game puts New Super Mario Brothers to shame, for sure. But yeah, I don't know. You'll see where the complaints come
in. I recommend it, but I'm sure. I mean, I have the benefit of going through it now, you know, a couple months after it's come out, so all the facts are really thorough.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That definitely will help.
I don't have to review it. I'm sure if I had to review it, it would stink, because I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, see, I reviewed the game, but we actually got a review copy for whatever reason, like, real late after the game had even come out. I think we got it, like, the day before, or maybe the day before the game was supposed to come out. But by then, there were even already facts. So,
well, actually, I was reading the facts, and at one point, they had me a little too prepared, because I learned that on the what's the name of the cactus enemies? Is it a spiny or spiky?
No, what are they?
I don't know. Whatever they are, one of them is a boss. Yeah. And I knew ahead of time that a lot of people had problems with it. What am I supposed to do? How I beat this boss? It has 300 HP. Oh, you have to hit it with the baseball bat.
So
I went in knowing that. I hit him with the baseball bat on the first turn. It hit him right in the face, so it didn't knock away any of his segments. And he still has 250 HP. What am I supposed to do?
You gotta wait till he's
so
got,
I still had to restart the battle. So even even though I went in prepared, I still screwed it up.
And that's the thing. I mean, even if you, like you're saying, even though you knew to bring in that item that you needed to
I didn't
win,
know I had to wait until all of his segments were up. And I didn't. I still missed one of them, and I had to beat him with two segments.
Right. And the game is so cryptic. I mean, there's just no way of knowing that.
Yeah.
It's just
and
built
I used,
around this idea of failing and trying again.
In the middle of the battle, Christy pops out and says, if only we had something large to hit him with. And I was like, okay, here's where I'm supposed to use the bat. So I use the bat, and then one more segment crawls up from the ground.
Yeah.
I was like, well, why didn't you wait a turn to tell me to use the bat? You told me to use it too damn early.
Yeah.
Scott, you haven't beaten the game yet, have you?
I haven't. I'm in world 5.
How many worlds are there?
The other week, and the final boss is kind of just this whole chain of those events where you need to use certain thing stickers at specific times to succeed.
Really?
Yeah.
In a good way or bad way?
Not really a good way, but...
Not a really good way, yeah.
With the thing stickers, I'm like, I have all these thing stickers, but I'm pretty sure all of them have a special purpose, so I never want to use any of them in battles.
Yep. And you'll never know which ones you need when until you're there, and then you have to go back and get them. And...
Yeah, like, there was nothing leading up to that battle with the cactus thing that let me know I was going to need a baseball bat. As soon as you get there, you're like, oh, this whole battlefield looks like a ballpark.
Right,
and the name, of the level is like something stadium, but it doesn't look like a baseball stadium from the outside. It looks like a tower.
Right. And as you're progressing through the level, I mean, it's like, there's like funny, like
it's Egyptian and stuff.
The
there's nothing even remotely baseball related up until the moment where you're supposed to figure it out. And by then
and
it's too late.
Yep. You're at the very end of the level and there's like, just no going back. So you pretty much just have to die and then
try it again.
The level and,
yeah. There's a save point right before it, which is nice, but
yeah.
It's you know, I'm ragging on it a lot because it gets a couple little things wrong, just like Nintendo, and it's funny because Nintendo's usually really good about telegraphing what the player is supposed to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Like especially their Japanese development teams, they're always like, we're going to lead you along the way, you know, and it's going to be challenging, but you're never going to feel like we cheated you. Right. And I feel like this game cheats me sometimes, and it's you know, it's not horrible. It doesn't do it egregiously or anything, at least not yet, but it's surprising from a company like Nintendo, especially Paper Mario, which is ostensibly a child-friendly RPG. You think they wouldn't blindside kids like that.
Right. I can't even imagine like a kid playing this game. I don't think a kid could get through it.
I mean, I think like a teenager, obviously, but like a 10-year-old, I think would struggle.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The battles are fun, though. I like that they kept the active battles where you have to hit the buttons to boost your attacks up and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, the battle system's a lot of fun. And, yeah, stickers, I mean, yeah, I think are actually pretty fun to use.
Yeah, they are.
So, yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to get some more insight from you next week.
Cool.
We'll see how your tune has changed. Patrick, what have you been playing this week?
Oh, I've been playing two different games, so I guess I'm going to start with the one that came out. I guess it's been out longer, which is The Cave. And I was hearing different things about this on Twitter. Like, Neil was really, really down on it. He didn't seem interested in it.
Well, just because there was no off-TV play, right?
Yeah, that's probably it. But which isn't a huge deal for me. Like, I love off-TV play, but I don't think this game is missing out
so
on anything.
So good, off-TV play. Oh, yeah. Off-TV play is so good.
It is good, but you can survive without it.
Yeah. But the game, it's really well written, really funny. The only character that really talks in it is the cave itself. And I guess describe how it works. You basically, there's seven characters. that you just choose three of these different characters for, and you can just switch between them at any given time while you're journeying through this cave. And each character has their own specific area, which is, and the whole thing is just kind of like this puzzle platforming, and it's very specific puzzles, like only one solution. It's not like a physics-based type deal at all. It's just using items interacting with each other in certain ways to progress to the next room. And I think it's really great.
How many times have you beaten it?
Just once so far. Just once. I need to go back. Like, that's the thing, because there are the seven characters, it encourages you to go back and choose a different set of three and go through the game again and experience completely new areas.
Right, with different unique puzzles for those different characters. Yeah. I hear the writing's like excellent. Like, the game's very, very funny.
Yeah. It's very ominous, I guess, because at least in the three areas I've done so far, at the very end of it, you kill somebody. The character, it's like some deep dark secret within the character. They need to
commit
this murder.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's very dark, and the cave kind of pokes fun at this, where he's just like,
what's the actual gameplay? Is it like platforming?
It's platforming and just interacting with these objects in the environment in unique ways. Like, at one point you need to climb up a ladder, but the ladder is just out of reach, so you need to climb down to the basement. It's like this house that's inside the cave. You get an umbrella out of the basement, go back up to the top so you can pull down the ladder. So you can go up the ladder.
Oh, Doctor Who? Doctor Who? Yeah, anyone?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like an old school adventure game.
It's not like an action game or anything?
No.
Okay, because I had heard someone explain, I thought I heard Metroidvania thrown around with it somewhere. So
it's very straightforward, I'd say. It's less Metroidvania.
Okay.
Right, and each individual area
is somewhat Metroidvania, I guess, but they're not very large.
But it's more like a classic adventure game, like Maniac Mansion or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's the same guy that did Maniac.
Yeah, I know. Ron Gilbert wrote it. Yeah, and Tim Schafer, yeah. His company. So
exactly, yeah. So it's like almost people have described it as like a spiritual successor to that game.
Okay, I probably won't like it then.
in terms at least of tone, you know, I don't know.
I think all those games are really funny, but I like the gameplay is completely uninteresting to me. So I can't get their hooks into me.
It's you have no love for Zach and Wiki.
Zack and Wiki was really good.
It was really good. I mean, that was basically just an adventure
I guess if
game.
You like Zack and Wiki, this would be the type of game for you. I guess the gameplay kind of scales exactly to that, except it's less of a 3D environment and more of a 2D environment.
Right. That's cool. How long did it take you to beat once?
Only like 4.5 hours.
Okay, that's not bad. I've been like just about to buy this several times and then just haven't. And mostly because I've been trying to get so much Fire Emblem done the past 2 weeks, but... yeah, I will probably download this sometime soon.
It's kind of
great. Is on your second playthrough, you get to skip the areas that were there's areas that are not character specific. They're just kind of general puzzle rooms, and you get to skip those on your second playthrough, so you can get right to the new content instead of replaying some of the old stuff.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool. That's a smart decision.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that I was just ragging on adventure games because I just realized the other game I'm playing right now is I just started the Walking Dead game.
Oh, there you go.
Which is like a total adventure game.
Are you still on episode one?
Oh, yeah, I'm not even finished it. I've only put into like maybe an hour into it.
Oh, okay.
It's really good. I like it a lot. Yeah. It's very well written.
I'm still in episode. Yeah.
That's what I hear.
I'm still in episode two. I got Fire Emblem. Had to put that down.
Carl says, Carl says it's the best Walking Dead anything. He says it's better. He thinks it's better than the comic book and the television series.
I remember the week the Wii U came out, they released the last episode for the Walking Dead game, and I did not play Wii U that entire night and just played Walking Dead.
To connect this back to Nintendo, one thing is I really wish this game needs to be on Wii U. Like, the way you interact with the game, like, it would be so much easier if I was doing it on a touchscreen. Like, if I have an original iPad, so games like that don't run that well on it. But if I had, like, a nice new iPad, I probably would have gotten the iPad version because I think it'd be a lot easier to play the game with a touch interface. It seems almost designed for that.
What are you playing it on now?
I'm playing it on the Xbox.
Oh, okay. See,
which
I'm
is really
on,
good.
I'm playing on PC. So
and you
like,
can just click on stuff, not a problem. Yeah. Right. With the Xbox, you have to, like, you know, move things around. The way it works is, like, you have to move the cursor with the joystick and then you use the face buttons to do, like, action commands on them. So if like a zombie's coming at you and you have to like quickly react to it, you have to move the joystick over to a target that pops up on the zombie's head, and then you have to press like a QTE pops up. As soon as you get the cursor lined up with the target, the thing lights up and it has like A, B, X, or Y on it, and you have to press it real quick. And then sometimes you have to do that multiple times. And I feel like if this game was on Wii U, it would be perfect because I could just do it all on the touchscreen and I could play it off TV.
Right, absolutely.
Well, when they make Walking Dead Season 2, I'm sure it will come to Wii U.
You know what? I'm kind of holding out. I've only bought the first episode on the Xbox, and I think if I like it, I think I'm going to try and stick it out and wait to see if it comes out like a definitive edition, kind of, because it won Game of the Year, so you know there's going to be like a billion Game of the Year editions of it at retail or something, and if I could pick that up or digitally for Wii U, I think I might do that. I might even rebuy just the first episode for that, just for that reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that interface would be a lot better. And I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to bring it to
you know, and especially because Nintendo's looking for all these, like, you know, they're really trying to establish themselves in the digital marketplace. Well, a good way to do that would be to get the game of the game that gave just one Game of the Year that, oh, by the way, just happens to be a downloadable title. Like, what this? You need to do it if you want people to take you seriously. You need to get this game on your platform.
Yep, it's all right though. They're getting that Walking Dead shooter game. That makes
Oh god!
Have you seen that trailer?
I have not.
Oh man, you need to see the trailer. Well, there was gameplay footage that leaked, and that looked horrendous. I mean, it looked like way worse than Zombie U, and had like none of the atmosphere and just interesting mechanics of Zombie U. I mean, this looked
boring,
really
shooter.
Bad.
They've released a bunch of like after the first trailer came out, and it wasn't any like no one. It got really poor reception, they released a bunch of new screenshots to say, hey, look, it's much better, and like all the screenshots have basically no zombies in them, and the ones that are there are like super zoomed out so you can't see how good or bad they look anyway.
And then like a week or two after that gameplay footage came out, they released an official trailer, and it shows absolutely no gameplay footage, and it just has two characters from the TV show, like two actors from the TV show, talking about the game and like why you should check it out. It's like 30 seconds long.
It's like,
and, yeah, it shows
if you didn't know
from the
already
game.
Like stay clear. Like, did you think this was damage control? Because I'm pretty sure all you did was make it worse.
Right. Yeah, it's really great. You should look it up. It's very
well. We can't show them the game. It's not good.
Just have the actors talk like as if they've even touched this game.
Hey, listen. Those guys did 6 hours of VO work one day. Okay.
I don't even think they're in the game. I don't think it's based on characters from the TV show.
Of course
not. I think it's those two.
Oh, is it those two? Is it? Okay. Okay. My bad. Well, still, it's very bad. Very bad.
You mentioned Zombie U, Scott, and I forgot. I've been playing that, too, recently.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah, I played
I'm
demo.
I'm past the nursery, and I'm at the point where you need to collect the 7 letters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm just not going to do that. That seems like such a chore, and I don't want to bother.
Oh, I think you have to do it.
I know, which is why I'm not going to do it.
Just done.
It's very easy to find them. I mean, you can get them all within like an hour.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't
easy.
Know where any of them are.
You could use a FAQ, which would be very easy. Or, I mean, if you go to the, you know, your monitor inside the safe house, and then you look at the, you know, you can see camera feeds for all the areas you've been.
Well, that's the problem. I haven't found all those camera feeds.
I think it'll still show like an envelope, you know, letting you know that that's where one of the letters is. And they're very easy to find. I mean, because I mean, you mostly see the entire area just walking through it when you go through it the first time. So it's just like go down an empty alleyway you didn't go before, you know, or something like that. I mean, it's very. I had no problem finding them.
I guess I'll go back to it at some point. Just
you should not... because the end of the game is so awesome. You shouldn't stop now. Okay. If it's really an issue, just really, like Mike said, just get a FAQ. I mean, you're not losing anything in doing that. You should totally stick with it.
Well, my other my brother's been playing the game too, and he's about halfway. He's at the point where you need to go get the gasoline to refill the generator.
Okay, so he's going to the nursery. Yeah,
he has to go to that guy's apartment.
Oh, right, yeah, the gas station
but
first. Yeah,
he got a game breaking bug where he can't translate the writing on the wall with the pad, and it won't let him translate it.
Hmm.
I was reading about it online, and I guess it's happened to other people too, where the prepper pad or whatever just doesn't translate the letters for you.
Huh, weird.
So he's stuck, and he's just done too.
That's lame.
Yeah. Huh. I wonder why that happened. That's weird.
So he can't just use a so is it, does it decode differently for every player? Because couldn't he just use a FAQ?
I think it does. It's just a random forge.
Jesus.
Right. There's like, I think there's two doors in the game where the code stays the same. But yeah, everything else is like randomly generated each time.
Of course, because they want to make it so it's replayable.
Right. But did he got the upgrade, so he should be able to translate? Yeah,
you need to get the upgrade to get out of the Tower of London.
Right.
Yeah. It's weird when he's at the Tower of London, there's just a helicopter like floating there in the sky. Like it's all bugged. Nothing is weird. Going forward. Yeah.
That's really weird. Wow.
Well, I've played the demo and I can't beat it. I tried to beat it twice.
You can't beat the demo? That's awesome. Where do you get where you
The first time I was just totally fucking around, so I don't really shouldn't even really count that one. But the second time I got to the point where there's that static zombie ghost thing in the basement. I assume that's probably very near the end of the demo.
Wait, there's a ghost one in the demo?
That I got.
Put them in the nursery?
Yeah, what do you do in the demo? Like where are you?
I don't know. I guess it might be the nursery because the first room is like a bunch of like children's furniture.
Wow, they do the nursery for the demo. That's crazy.
It's only like you only go into like 4 or 5 rooms at the most.
Uh huh.
So I don't know how big is the nursery.
I mean, it's like 3 floors, but I mean, it's not huge. I mean, it's just
I think you only go through part of the nursery then, because I only remember going into like 4 or 5 rooms at the most. Well, it's maybe you end up in an alley. At some point, you leave the nursery, and that's like then you go downstairs, and that's where the friggin' ghost zombie thing is.
And you manually go downstairs, or do you like fall through the floor?
Yeah, you fall through the floor. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that's the nursery. That's like that's probably the best level in the whole game.
Well, I guess that's why they picked it for the demo. I
mean, yeah, it's
terrifying.
Oh
so.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. Yeah. I mean, that's a good one to pick just because there's such little action for so long. And then, yeah, and then...
But I imagine, you go in with, like, basically nothing. Like, you go in with, like, a handgun.
Yep.
I mean, it seems like the nursery takes place later in the game.
It does, normally, yeah.
So you'd probably go in with a decent amount of weaponry, at least.
Nah, not really. Yeah, I mean...
That's the thing about Zombie U. You don't normally carry that much with you.
You find a crossbow in there.
Yeah, the crossbow... You won't find a crossbow there in the regular game. You find the crossbow earlier. But, yeah, like Patrick's saying, you don't really carry a lot with you because you have such limited inventory space that it's like if you carry a lot, well then you're not going to be able to pick up stuff that you find. And a lot of times you don't have very much ammo, so it's like pointless to carry like some of the machine guns because you're just not really going to get much use out of them.
Right.
Normally I just carry the pistol and the bat and then maybe like one assault rifle.
Yeah, just in case. Yeah, just in case things get hairy. Yeah, same with me. And then I'd have a couple grenades, a couple of the flares, and then like just some health refill items. But yeah, never very many like straight on weapons. So
okay, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's enjoyable. I think I'm gonna try and get it when it's on sale if I can get it for like half off or something like that.
Yeah, you definitely should. I would bet you could probably even find it a little cheap at GameStop now, but maybe not.
I don't buy used games.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's interesting that they made that the demo level though. I had no idea. I just assumed it was the opening of the game.
Oh, no. And then I also played the Rayman Legends demo, which kicks ass.
Oh, it's so good.
I think we've talked about that before, so.
Probably. Can't wait for that. I was just tweeting today that, like, once that game comes out, I will forget all about this Wii U, like, shortage of games.
I'm just playing Super Paper Mario, Sticker Star, so it's... Yeah. I don't even care.
Yeah, then just wait till next week.
I actually had a bunch of friends over last weekend, and we played a lot of Nintendo Land, which was nice, because I haven't had a chance to play it, like, in basically since it came out.
Yeah.
We played
like
a lot of the
party setting.
Yeah, we beat, like, the first 8 levels of the Zelda game, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. So Patrick, anyway, go back to Zombie U, but what else have you been playing?
I've been playing Puddle, which just came out today as of this recording on the Wii U eShop. So those who say that there is a game drought, you are kind of right and kind of wrong.
Now when you
did well, it's not drought, really a drought did... anymore now that we've got a puddle.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Didn't even know.
Beautiful. But,
the game, you could compare it to Fluidity. It's basically the same concept where you're kind of just moving this liquid back and forth across different levels, just trying to reach the end, where I guess Fluidity kind of has more of a goal base, like collect or whatever you do in Fluidity. I'm actually not that sure. But what's different about Puddle is you take on, you control different liquids. Like there's some points you're controlling nitroglycerin. Sometimes you're in like the bloodstream of the human body. It's kind of this entire interwoven tale where it's the liquid transferring itself, like at one point you become like a juice drink, which the guy drinks, which goes into his body, and then he goes to the bathroom, and then you're in the sewers system as rat goo, and it just kind of keeps flowing, and you move from one point to the next.
Interesting.
Huh, that's pretty awesome.
It's really strange, but the problem it faces is that each fluid, while it has its own unique properties, they're not really expanded on. Like, it's just kind of like hit and miss. You're playing as this thing with this type of properties for two levels, and then you move on to the next thing, and no real idea sticks for that long. So Neil kind of compared it to Night Sky, where in Night Sky, have you guys played that? I'm not sure.
No.
In that game, there's just many different ideas that are just thrown throughout the game that are all different, and they don't really come together in one cohesive experience.
Sure. So it's just like, do one specific fluid for a little while, and they just never come back to it.
Yeah.
How do you control the fluid? I mean, are you tilting the gamepad?
That's like fluidity? You can use the tilting of the gamepad, but that's just awful. You just use the ZL and ZR triggers.
Okay.
There's one specific... When you're in the human body, to make the fluid move, you kind of have to make it kind of like pump through the bloodstream. So you have to tilt left and right, back and forth to like build up... What it called it, like tension or whatever.
Sure.
To push the blood through. I can't imagine doing that with the tilting controls because you're trying to also navigate around obstacles and stuff while you're going.
Yeah.
And if you're violently shaking the gamepad back and forth.
I can't
imagine.
No good. Was this originally a Steam game, did you say?
It was Steam. It's on PSN, Xbox Live.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's made the rounds.
Everywhere.
So but this is a game that's come out on a million other platforms and is finally coming to Wii U. So Walking Dead has no excuse.
I liked it. I didn't like it a lot, but I liked it enough.
Would you give it in your review?
I gave it a 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Okay. Yeah, it's not bad. How much was it?
I think it's $8. I don't know.
$8? Okay. Well, yeah, you wouldn't have paid for it, but...
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think it was $8.
Cool. Not bad. But you might recommend it to people who are looking for something to do on their Wii U's now?
I would definitely recommend if you are looking for something to do, which I'm assuming a lot of people are.
Yeah, probably.
Unless they got the cave, in which case they might still be busy.
Yeah. I think I know the answer, but if you could only get one of these right now, which would you say, the cave or puddle?
I'd say cave.
Yeah, I thought so. That's what I'm going to do.
You should do that.
Yeah, I absolutely will. Okay, so I think that does it for what we've been playing. Mike, you've been silent for a while, so I assume what you're playing right now is more Mario?
Yeah, a little bit.
No problem. All right, guys, well, thanks for being here.
I was organizing my stickers and
there you go.
Converting things.
That start button, organizing your stickers.
Oh, it's the best thing. I just hate that it puts the big stickers in the front. Like, put them in the back. I'm not going to use those.
Yep, I always move them to the back, yep. All right, cool, guys. Well, thanks for being here, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget, you can send your listener mail questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and please rate and review the show on iTunes.